going to move right along. I enjoyed dinner. I've got to take some of Eric's notes because he took some notes, but it was just so profound, the understanding. For a lot of years, I pursued the truth. And as many of you know, I was pretty indoctrinated. And not to say that I'm not now. As I pursued the truth, the nature of the truth was something that was a little mysterious to me. And we began to have conferences, and what would happen is people would hear something in a new way and begin to talk about terminology. And we began to realize that language was one of our greatest hindrances, because people really do worship the language they have of God rather than God. Now, not all people, but for most part. And language, culture. And so I started hearing about this guy named Marquis Hunt, and from, as we said earlier, Sharon Oates is the one who mentioned it and said, you got to get together. And we connected, and we've been doing stuff for a number of years, and Marquis is on Facebook and several writings, and we've actually got a packet where we have one of his writings in there. I don't think he knows that, and we did his bio, and I think that when we begin to look on his website, he had a lot about the mask and being authentic. And the one thing I'll tell you about Marquis is when you get his conversation down, it shifts. And so it's always expanding. So we're, at this time, we're going to ask Marquis to come and share. And then we'll move to our next speaker. So are you ready?
I suppose I am ready.
So we'll give him about 30 minutes, and I just very thankful for the opportunity. He's in Little Rock, so he's closer to y'all than he is to me. But we converse and talk a lot, and
not close to you.
So there you go.
Oh, thank you, Mark. How are we recording through the mic or through the audio thing here?
We're recording through that.
Okay, good. So I can come up here?
Yeah.
For the minute.
So the, we got rid of the mask and it fell off. So.
Going beyond the mask?
Yep.
Marcus got it, the mask went up and went. It's okay.
It's going. Fine.
Well, welcome everybody back from lunch. It's good to see you all. Before I move forward, I think we're going to, I'd like us to observe about 60 to 120 seconds of silence or meditation. And then we'll move into some discourse. I want to see as you see. I want to hear as you hear. I want to know as you know. And I want to be as you are. I want to transcend within beyond time to reality, waiting to be received into desire that I might see as one who sits higher, but not to boast or to respond untrue, but to see if I'm an obstruction to you being you. What is the meaning of life as we know it? Beyond an Epicurean adventure, beyond consequence, we blow it, but not if the pleasure can move us to beauty and we transcend within, beyond time to reality. Sitting alone one day in the riverside, I looked to see what I could see that couldn't hide. There was many faces and different conversations, traveling thoughts from several persuasions. Asking, what is the meaning of life as we know it? If it's an Epicurean adventure beyond consequence, we blow it. But not if this pleasure can move us to beauty and we transcend within beyond time to reality. But these are things I see while alone, while looking through others to find my way home. But the reason I see by chance was a blessing. I was placed in position because another was missing. But this juxtaposition was not happenstance grace. While the other is missing, it does not mean out of place. I'm in search of the changeless me, when the what I was meets the what I be, and the what I see has happened to me, because the me that's free is the changeless me. Thank you all so much for opening your hearts to be in this space. And as I begin to think about why I'm here, I find myself almost without an answer. In terms of knowing exactly what there is to say, and if there is something I can say that would shed light on who we are and where we're going or where we're coming from. But where I am is here, in this moment, and there is no path to here. I cannot go to where I am. And I cannot leave where I am. I am always here, right here, in this moment, in this state. And while I seem to change into something different, I can always remember how I did, or that I'm doing it, or what I'm becoming as I am leaving myself for myself. And discovering who I am, which seems to be a riddle that has been with us time without end. And I don't profess to know what humanity looked like at the beginning. I can't remember. I have some conversations and some talks and some references that give me a hint as to what we used to be or what I may have been. I can't even chart my own beginning. I was told when I was born. But I don't quite remember it. I don't remember my entrance into this world I call humanity. I don't quite remember what I looked like on May 3rd, 1968. I can't even tell you when I had my first thought. If I go back now and try to conjure up a memory, I think I can see something around age 2, around age 3. I can see myself walking in my mother's beauty shop. I don't remember having a conversation, don't remember who I saw. I don't remember much definition. I just have some recollection that I was in a moment back then. And I would probably be hard-pressed to go into full detail as to what happened just yesterday. And I might have some recall as to what happened a few moments ago when we were at lunch. Or, and Mark remembers it as dinner. And it was lunch for me, dinner for Mark. Things seemed to have different apparitions for all of us. So when Mark called me and asked me about this mask, or this particular thing was moving beyond the mask, it seems like an easy conversation for me to talk about, because I see masks all around us, and I see masks all around me. And then over lunch, they were talking about the mask, and something Mark had said earlier, I think before I was here, and I heard Rokas say that Mark had said a statement that sponsored a thought in him about the mask being God hides not just from you, or not necessarily from you, but God hides for you and on your behalf. And that conversation moved into sometimes our own belligerence of pushing truth or pushing the message or a message on someone. perhaps beyond their ability to bear, or what we would think beyond their ability to bear. I have some friends who talk to me, and some friends that have fallen by the wayside or have distanced themselves from me. They would say, Marquis, you have to give yourself out in doses. And because if you come in with the full bounty of who you are, it can be overwhelming, sometimes intense. And I find myself living several roles and several dimensions and several doses of who I am. Several, I guess I should say, measurements would come out of who Marquis is. And very seldom am I able to walk into a room and be fully who I am, or at least be fully what I know myself to be. I find myself censoring who Marquis is. And sometimes I'm censoring because of my own judgment, because in that censoring, I may be finding you unworthy to contain what I think is my better self, or perhaps even my liberated self. And no doubt I've been in moments when I have exposed certain aspects of my nakedness, and that nakedness has been seen as offensive or liberal or beyond the law or beyond the boundary. And so I tend to see certain lenses or certain items or certain statements or truths or realities through different lenses. Some years ago, there was a book released called The Prayer of Jabez. And the book took on a insurmountable popularity, especially among the evangelical Christian. But the prayer was quite simple. Oh Lord, that you might enlarge my territory, increase my borders. And I begin to think this is an interesting prayer, an interesting musing to enlarge my territory. And if I think about this through a Western lens, through the American idea, a boundary or territory almost looks like land. It looks like something I can own or I can possess. And unfortunately, I say unfortunately, at least in this moment, it may sound a little different tomorrow, but in this moment, when we think about owning territory, we think about things that become possessive or things we possess, things that become ours, and we get an expanded landmass to experience who we are. Seldom, though, do we think of the territory being mental space or mind space, where God expands our minds or our ability to see. And we see even beyond our known limitation, the capacity that we've placed on ourselves. And oftentimes we think of ourselves as limited, even though we don't admit that we think we're limited. Sometimes we have adopted or we wear a mask of limitation. And so there is that treatment of those of us who believe God is hiding from us, and then there's the treatment of those that may believe that God is hiding for us. And so sometimes, in order to preserve what would be a dose for our future moment, because it comes out in increments, or time-release capsules, because you could get some medicine now that's time-release capsule. And it's a matter of, if you call God, God, then it's as though God is releasing aspects of what God is in dispensations or in moments or segues or pockets of time as the human consciousness becomes ready and available to see more of this unmasked, naked, vulnerable idea we call God. And so here I am now thinking about what this mask could look like and hearing the mask of, one mask I wore was the mask called Christianity. And there was a time when I decided to disrobe myself or to disarm myself of this particular mask. And when I did it, I didn't look like a Christian anymore when I took the mask off. And then there, I find even within the context of Christianity or the several religions, there are sometimes different masks or layers of masks that we remove. And so there is a certain type of Christianity that I used to, a certain type of Christian I used to be. And then I removed that mask, and then I became a different type of Christian. And there was a different, then there was another mask of Christianity that I had, and I removed that mask. Time won't allow me to detail which masks I had. But suffice it to say, there is a particular mask now that I took off that I don't look like that anymore. And sometimes I don't quite know what I look like, because even now I can't see my face. I can't see myself. But you can. You can see what I look like. And I can determine, as I look in a mirror or look through a looking glass, I can remember what I saw this morning and what I decided to show you. And even now, you get just a snapshot of what I look like or what I may be, and I'm still covered up, or I'm still covering up. I'm still covering up because I'm not able to walk into this room in a physical sense naked, because it may be a bit too much for some. And while I may be able to have my own freedom with this nakedness or with this nudity, it may be an offense to you. So I may be masked for you. Now, if I were probably a little happier with the way I looked under all these clothes, and I had all the musculature that was standing out and outstanding, I might decide to take my shirt off. And depending on what mask you wear, whether it's a mask of acceptance or a mask of jealousy or a mask of possessiveness, whether you are straight, heterosexual, homosexual, and whether you are attached to someone you want to own a clutch hold of, you may be offended at how I show up or how impressionable or how charismatic or how seductive I may be. Because those masks and those masks we wear tend to create reasons for us to protect ourselves. And so sometimes we wear a mask to hide our identity. And we know this. So people can't quite know who we are or what we look like. And so then we are afraid. And so we look sometimes at the scriptures. And I remember when I used to really be, I used to wear a mask of scripture, where I would, rather than speak the truth as it issues forth out of my heart, I would speak a truth owned by someone named Paul or someone named Peter or someone named Isaiah. I would speak a truth owned by someone named John, and I wouldn't necessarily declare my own. And I was still wearing a mask, and some of us still wear the mask, and sometimes the mask is necessary. But if I want someone to know who I am and to be able to recognize me, perhaps in a critical moment, in a moment of emergency or a moment of compassion or a moment of intimacy, I don't want them to confuse me for my lookalike. And oftentimes now in this world, and especially in a world of popular classism and cultural grouping, it's easy for us to hide in the context of a genre or a context of a group or a clan or a clique or even a religion. And I go back and I ask, what is it all for? And I wanted to make some time to ask a few questions or answer a few questions, if you guys had any. But in hearing this discourse in my head and reflecting on old stories, and then the word and the name that's common in this room is the man we call Jesus, or the man we call God, whom we also call Jesus. And I've come to realize that many of us are now wearing not just a mask of Christianity, we wear a mask called Jesus. And it's easy for us to feel this experience of Jesus almost vicariously or through writing of the word, because we have this perfect man. He is the perfect front for us to label or to blame or to project or to deflect onto. We can embrace the idea of Jesus loves, the unconditioned love of Christ. And we can tell the world about this unconditioned love of Christ. Because in some aspect, it still releases us from the responsibility and the accountability of being this expression of love, this expression of openness and kindness and tenderness, and where we give anyone sharing our space the freedom to be completely vulnerable or completely naked. And we can follow this illusion, this imagery of nakedness, because if you've ever been in love with someone, if you ever allowed yourself to share the space of someone that you love and that loves you or that you believe loves you, these usually are the moments when you allow yourself to disrobe. You peel back the sheets, you peel back the layers, and you allow this person to see you for who you are, because in this moment you trust that they will remain. And you make a promise for yourself and for them that you too will remain. Largely, this is a romantic notion, because we still, even in these intensely romantic and these intensely intimate situations, find ways to experience the reality of betrayal, where we have been disappointed because we are now seeing that there were masks present that lived even beyond our known capacity to experience intimacy. And many of us, myself included, am still discovering masks that I wear that hide myself from me. The song would say, Rock of Ages, cleft for me, let me hide myself in thee. And we are still hiding and we're still looking, and then I come here and I'm thinking, what am I going to say? Am I going to say something dangerous? Am I going to say something explosive? Am I going to feel the need to preach or to reference what is the divine word? Or am I going to be bold enough to at least remove the mask of hiding behind scripture? Or hiding behind the sacred text? Can I say that I am the sacred text? One need not look beyond themselves to find what is true. And in this moment, if my intention is to understand or to embrace God, can I embrace God fully in this moment? Can I embrace what is the truth, the spiritual essence of who I am in this moment, whether I am or am not literate? If I don't know how to read, can I at least read myself and then read you and understand you and come with the intention? Can I know that I'm looking at a person with a mask? Can I just accept that there are things about you that you are hiding from me? Can I say that so boldly that I know that there are things, even though I may know your name, there's something about you that I don't know, and there's something about you that you are not yet willing to show me. But me not seeing it does not determine whether it is still here to be seen or to be known. And as I experience these moments, as we are exploring God, or exploring life, or exploring love, and exploring truth beyond our known capacity, we're being pushed and prodded and pressed beyond our limitation, because we have thought we've had a limitation. But according to Jabez, God's emphasis and this particular God will move us and expand our territory, which means he will allow us to experience more than we thought was viable. Perhaps more than we thought was real. Perhaps more than we thought was knowable. But can we contain, can we boldly look beyond and re-identify ourselves, or can we be honest with ourselves about the fact that we're wearing a mask? And I was having some conversations this week, the last couple weeks. I just buried my mom, and I come from a fairly large family, and so right now we're in the throes of tension and estate stuff and people who want what they want, and they want when they want it. And coming from a very religious family, I find that we are using our faith as a vice to create wedges of division within the ranks of our own family. We're using our faith to understand prayer, and sometimes we're even using prayer to avoid conversation. And sometimes we use prayer because we are believing that God is going to do something that we can't do ourselves. And sometimes we use prayer as a way to tell God something that we don't think God already knows. Which is interesting to me, that we have this idea that we could actually, God, could you please help my sister Linda? As if God is not fully aware, perhaps even more than I am, of what she needs or where she is. But we have this arrogance to think that God is awaiting our command or our demand or awaiting our insight, because we have believed the Lot story and we visualize that God is literally sending angels into the land to see if there are any believers there. So we have become God's eyes and ears, unless, of course, we are God's eyes and ears and God is diminished in capacity, if I am diminished in capacity. Which merits some questioning, some perusal, if God is not seeking to disconnect himself or itself or herself for ourselves. And if Rokas is right and this divine separation is critical to our ability to experience what we are. And so we're looking at this whole conversation, and now I'm looking at this whole idea of Jesus, and I ask the question, when I'm confronted with grieving and faith and which mask I'm wearing, I'm asking myself, is it okay for me to expect you to be better than Jesus? And I'm thinking that I would be less than appropriate to tell you or to help you or to enable you to keep this idea of Jesus abiding as superior to you. And I ask myself, what would be the harm in someone improving upon what Jesus did? And for the life of me, I can't find any harm in it. But I find so much resistance to this notion. And I'm wondering now, if this is a mask we can remove. Can we stop hiding behind Jesus? And I got 2 minutes and 22 seconds. You, I got 7 minutes left?
7 minutes.
I don't know. You ain't the boss. You ain't the boss. You just, you're my assistant. I got 5 minutes. So, I may have said a lot, I may have said a little. But in an interest to ask this question, is it appropriate for me to look out into this world, to expect of myself to live beyond the model that we see living through the writings, the Gospels, and the Epistles, the Old Testament? Is it okay for me to anticipate that you might impress me beyond what Jesus could? Is it okay And what would that mean if we were to see that happen? Mike?
What's the difference between the mask of Jesus and the mask of Christ?
I asked you a question. You asked me a question. You can't be asked to answer the question.
He's doing what Jesus did.
Well, if I were to... Jesus wore a mask. Christ wore a mask. Several of them. One of them was called Jesus. One of them is called Eric. Jesus wore a mask, several of them. One of them was called Son. One of them was called Elias. One of them was called Christ. And he showed up in many moments, according to the story, as a wine bibber, a wino, a party man, a party animal. He showed up as another, as one cavorting with sinners, which means he showed up as a friend of the misunderstanding. But if I were to class the distinctions between the mask of Jesus and the mask of Christ, Christ's mask lives. Jesus is included in one of the masks of Christ. And Jesus' masks are indicative of how people saw him and sometimes how he showed himself or if he showed himself.
Great need of people to worship, and often our worship is energized by our lack of our own validity, so God accommodates for that. Absolutely. But when it's time to take up the mat to recognize our worth, that we didn't come because we're unworthy, we came because we're supremely worthy. How beautiful. Yeah. I'm with you, buddy.
Thank you. Well, I think my time is up for this session. I'll come back a little later, and hopefully we can have some dialogue, some discourse.
Yeah, we'll. If I'm understanding, anything. I'll give an example, and Marquis really sparks a lot of things in me because he's very creative with words. He helps me find. He's a definer, and the thought that I've been having is we talk about the ego, but the ego is not evil in itself. The ego has a function. Now, most people who get up and watch NASCAR loves NASCAR. They love watching NASCAR. And they understand the function of it, but they don't understand a thing about how to work on it. We don't really understand the full function. We don't understand the full nature of the mask or what the mask is, but we know its function. And so what I'm seeing and what Marquis was saying is that we don't fully understand the full nature of Jesus, the full nature of the Christ, which Jesus came to reveal who? The Father. But we understand function, and when we begin to function, it's just like we know from biblical studies that the nature of what we call church doesn't exist. But we have to work within that to create something functional, the citywide church. I see the same thing, is that we have interpreted the Jesus in light of the law. We've put Jesus in the law and said, you've got to fit this, which don't fit. But Jesus was willing to wear any mask possible in order that at one time he could reveal it. And there again, he revealed it. He wore flesh. He wore flesh what? For us. Not because he had to. And he wasn't doing it for himself. And I think there is a part of us that we protect. There's a part of us that when we come into real reality, whatever we consider real. And so we might get into a little more conversation about the nature and function of Jesus. And
I'd like to follow him if I could.
That, yeah, you're next. So come on, Rokas.
I'd really like to follow him.
And then we'll give, I'll give an intro to Rokas. Let me say this. A few years ago, we were, we were in a conference, and I had been hearing about Rokas from a man named Lynn Hayes.
Yeah.
And he had been talking about it, and we were in a meeting in Leslie, and nobody had told me, and he went by and he had a name tag. And when I saw that name tag, I was so excited. And he sat down, and he began to talk to me about something and opened up so much stuff for me. And so without further ado, Rokas, and I'm just looking forward to what you have to say. He was earlier, and he said, no, I want to hear some more people. So
I was so glad I can follow Marquis, because you brought up such a beautifully appropriate subject. Can I have that?
You want 30 minutes?
I'd like to step within the boundaries. Good. My sweet wife, Caroline, whom I wish always was here, she's like, when I'm without her, I'm like, well, never without her, but Carol and I spent 4 years traveling, and we had to leave everything we held dear, family, fellowship. But because I had to leave everything, it opened me in a way that few people are able to open themselves to receive greater light and understanding. Because when you find everything has failed you, you're much more willing to give it up than if you think it still has some worth. So we were traveling, and my wife was asking Jesus about, well, what about the kingdom? And she had a vision. She saw Jesus in a standard pose. Stedman, I think, is the artist, and he's kneeling at a rock, and he's auburn hair, and he's looking skyward. And the glass in front of the picture cracked, and Jesus said to her, he said, now I will begin to show you who I really am. Now, in light of the idea of a mask, in the light of the powerful things that Marquis, that you were saying, about the need for God to have a mask in order to be able to dish himself out appropriately and not overburden our consciousness. It's clear to me that Jesus himself had to withhold himself in this last age, because the truth of what he brought was too brilliant and too bright for us to conceive, much less receive. So I'm going to get a few comments first. As you know, there's a belt of stars that seems to move around our planet because of the apparent motion of the Earth around the Sun. This belt seems to move in 12 zodiacal signs appropriate for each month continuously. It's referred to in Psalms. And we have the star signs. We don't know exactly where they came from, Leo and Sagittarius, and they follow one another successively through the year, creating the months of the year. And there's another aspect of the Earth's motion. It has a slight wobble that you may know about that takes 26,000 years to complete, much like a top, spinning top that dies in its last dying moments. It makes a wobble. Well, the Earth has a wobble like that. It takes 26,000 years to complete. And so those same zodiacal signs that are used for the months of the year for time delineation can also be used to delineate the ages of time, called the precession of the equinoxes. If you don't know about it, look it up. It's awesome. And we can use those same zodiacal signs of the Maseroth, the Hebrew word, to delineate the ages of time. Beginning with Adam, then, since it goes in reverse, the age of Taurus begins and lasts until the Exodus, or thereabouts, or Abraham. And the children of Egypt came out of Egypt and worshiped the calf, right, which we like Taurus. But the sign of the next age, being Aries, was a lamb. And the sacrificial animal for Israel was a lambs and goats, Aries. So that age, Moses and Abraham stand at the beginning of that age. And then 2,000 years later, Jesus and John the Baptist, they stood on the cusp of Pisces, the Piscean age. You have the catacombs have the Greek letters that symbolize JC, as it were, and are in the shape of a fish. And Jesus called his disciples fishers of men. So at the beginning of the age of Pisces, there is a whole dispensation of light for that age. And today, we're at the age of Aquarius, the water bearer, pouring out water. And so, as in the beginning of each age, there's a dispensation of light that comes to govern that age. So you are the one standing on the cusp of Pisces and Aquarius, and you are the one bringing the light for this whole dispensation that's dawning. And of course, it's called not just the climax of the Piscean age, but it's the climax of all ages, because the light that's coming in this age is a consummate knowing of reality, answering the question, who are you? The great desire, ultimately, the only true desire you can have is to know who you are. Because it's the only territory that you can validly possess. You can't really own your wife. You can try it. Doesn't work real good. You can't really own your children. But you can possess your land. You can become you. You can own conscious identity and awareness of who you are. It's your great privilege. You're the only one who can do it, too. There's nobody else can really be you. They can try. Or you can try to be another. You can try to be... Who would I like to be? Barbara Streisand, wrong sex, and all that. Who would you like, you know, if you're... Who would you like to be, right?
Me.
So I'm thinking of this scripture in Peter. I want to quote this because I want to be relative here.
See if I can
say this. I really want to make a kind of a dispensational comment pertaining to time. Like Marquis, you've come into time. And the only way to make peace with who you are is to embrace your experience as a time-space being. Now you can't do that when you're trapped. When you fight and resist time, when you fight and resist being who you are physically, then you can't be who you are. You can't. And if you don't know that essentially you're not material, essentially you're not physical, you can't really be physical. Right? I mean, if you're not aware that you're eternal, then this physical being feels like a trap. You have some kind of an unconscious knowing that you're more than this, and you're feeling imprisoned, and you fight against every aspect of it. But you can't really be here because you're not at peace, because you don't know you're more than this physical expression. So you're always finding something wrong with it. You're not spiritual enough. You're not obedient enough. You're not hearing God enough. You're not... I mean, the list is unending. There's something wrong with the world. There's something wrong with this. We're not doing this. We should be doing that. What is it? It's all a resistance to being physical. It's not embracing... And that's what I want to go to. It's not embracing. Let me say this quick, because... Good. That's good. I think I can do this. Listen to this now. This is totally remarkable. In Peter, this 2 Peter, the first chapter, it says, for he received from God, speaking of Jesus, honor and glory, where there came such a voice to him from the excellent glory, this is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. So Peter is referring to the occasion where Jesus was transfigured and they saw him in his light body. They were totally impressed. Moses and Elijah, they wanted to put up, you know, this was the great event of how they knew Jesus was something more than a physical body on the planet like they were, right? And this voice came from heaven. We heard. We were with him in the Holy Mount. And then he says this. Listen to this. You can hardly believe this when you see it in full context here. We have also a more sure word of prophecy. Now, what he's saying is that the Torah, being the word of prophecy referred to here, is more valid and sure than this awesome experience they had of seeing him transfigured. Whoa. Now, you know, the Torah is greatly treasured by... greatly, and by Christians too. Now listen to this. To which you do well, you take heed as a light in a dark place. It's compared to that flashlight. You're really in the dark, so you need a flashlight to shine your path. The Torah is compared to a flashlight. It's not without merit, not without purpose. It's prophetic. It shines into the future, helps you understand reality. Our brother was speaking on this, right? Now, listen to this. To which you do well to take heed. Don't discredit the scriptures. It doesn't bless benefit, right? As unto a light in the dark place until the day dawn. Now, how do you like to compare a flashlight to the sun rising? Until the day star rise in your hearts. I'd like to suggest that this has never happened, really, fully. During the Piscean Age, people have remained mostly imprisoned to external worship, norms of external things, of stained glass windows, of spires. There have been many individual seers and mystics that surely have see more. But now, here it says, until the day start. And what I want to say to you is that we're living in that day when the consciousness of man, the door of his perception is being opened to a brilliancy of knowing and understanding that transcends any age that man's ever been in. That's why this is called the consummation of ages. And when Jesus appeared to my wife, what he was saying to her, now, I came, I incarnated, I took on a body like you have, but I have not been understood nor seen. They've only seen me as if looking at a mask, because they needed to worship me, because they couldn't see themselves. And because they couldn't see themselves, they made me into something that they greatly desired. They could maybe be, but couldn't possibly believe. And you brought the subject up beautifully, the contrast, the thought, well, maybe Jesus came to illuminate us to know something, not so much about the Father, yes, undoubtedly, but so we would know something about ourselves, so that our perception door could be opened, so finally we could see who we really are.
Yeah.
Now that's what I want to spend a few minutes. That's what I really want to talk about.
All this was just an intro.
to maybe get at the subject. And this is my subject. What image did Jesus come to project into human consciousness that would bring true salvation? What image did Jesus come to project into human consciousness by which man would be able to see the truth about who man really is? The object is not to see who Jesus is. He didn't come to be seen. And the object really isn't ultimately either to see the Father, although that's wound up in the purpose clearly. But the thing that imprisons you is not who you not know about God. The thing that imprisons you and locks you into physical mortality is you not knowing who you are. The simplicity of that is so clear when you think about it. What could possibly imprison you into a flesh body? Is the non-realization in you that you are eternal. Now, Jesus broached the subject. He said, pray on this wise. Our Father, which art in heaven. So clearly, he asks you to identify with your eternal self. Your greater eternal self. And the thing that keeps you from owning, how strange this is. How strange this is. The thing that now keeps us from owning our experience of self is the worshiping of the man who came to show you who you are. Man, that's a strange contradiction. And that's why Jesus showed that image to Carolyn and said the glass began to crack. Glass speaks of perception, right? And now I will begin to show you who I really am. Well, who is he really, right? He's wore many different masks, but not all those masks have the same value. There is one particular mask that he wore by intent and purpose. That is a projection out of the eternal world into physical reality of an image created there so that man might thereby ascend into the true knowing of his own reality. That's who Jesus is. Jesus is the gift of eternity to humanity to break man free from the perceptions of self that keep him bound in the lower echelons of this physical reality, right? How beautiful. Now, listen to what Jesus said. I am the truth. What truth? I'm the truth of you. So we want to make him absolute truth. We want to worship him. Jesus said, I am the truth. So we're going to worship him because he's the absolute truth. And no man would dare say such a thing. No, he didn't mean that he was the absolute truth. He said, I'm the truth of you. If you will look at me, you can know who you are. That's my intent, my purpose. That's the message that I am. Not just the message I bring with the word of mouth, but this projection that I am out of eternity is the truth of who you are. If you look at me and allow yourself to see, you can know who you are. That's the great mystery of his coming. But it couldn't be known in the age that's past. It couldn't be. It wasn't time. It was an immature church. There was gross darkness that had to enact itself. We had the whole display of the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages, of the Renaissance, of science, everything that's happened to this hour. But now we stand in the moment of perception. Now we stand in the moment of illumination. This is that moment. Let me show you quickly in 11 minutes. I want to try to put in words, because I thank you. You know, I thank you for providing audience so I can say the thing that I always want to say it, and I want to say it again and again, because sometime I'm going to really say it. You know what I mean? I'm going to really say it, and it's okay. Every time is okay. But I know there's a depth to what's happening to us that's just begun to surface. And that is part of me. So, in order to give an image about you, Jesus took on a flesh body subject to mortality just like yours. He became like to you in every respect. And then the bishop put in there, sin accepted. Some bishop wrote that in there. I'm totally convinced. I'm totally convinced. We wanted to make him so holy because he never looked at a woman to lust after her, or whatever your problem is. Jesus never did that. Because after all, somebody's got to be holy, right? No, that's not in his statement of intent. You know how I know that? Because I know his heart. He didn't come to show you what you're not. He didn't come to act out some kind of perfection that you didn't have. And then you say, he became like unto you in all respect, sin accepted. That's the intent of that statement that's been twisted. The intent there is to make you unlike him. The intent of his coming was to make you know that you're like him, the opposite. Now you can know there's a perversion of the text there because the intent has been thwarted by the literalization of those words. You okay on that? I just got sort of hung up on that for a minute. But here's the word. If I could say this. In order to show you who you are, he was hung on a wooden cross. That is the image. A man crucified on a wooden cross is the image of who you are. Can I say that again? This we have not seen for 2,000 years, and perhaps for all ages preceding. A man hanging on a wooden cross is the true image for you to look at to know who you are. Well, then what are you? Well, whatever you see him to be is who you are. Well, what is he? He's the eternal word that came out of unlimitedness and took on limitation of flesh by the will of his Father and was limited on a cross. So there's the perfect image for you to fit into, for you to understand who you are. You too are unlimited consciousness. You too are the eternal word. You too were sent from the Father. The cross that you're on is not a Roman cross. It's not a couple of wooden stakes or a single stake. The cross that you're on is your own physical mortality. Your own physical mortality is the cross of limitation where you are crucified upon by your Father's will. There's the cross. Don't you love it? It's not because you did something wrong. It's not because you ate the wrong tree or listened to a snake. It's not because the Anunnaki messed with your genetics. None of that. Plus a whole lot of other reasons that you can read about in almost all kinds of metaphysical books. All kinds of ideas have come to try and explain the truth of man. But none have come from the source, from the Father's heart, like this man did, to show an image of truth that will release you forever from the cycles of mortality and incarnation repeatedly to return to the Father's house, which is the great knowing in you of your truth. That's the Father's house. Father's house is in some other realm. The Father's house is in some other planet. The Father's house is in some greater wisdom. The Father's house is the awareness in you of your eternalness and your belonging to the light. And the fact that the light is your source and your being, and that you don't need any kind of atonement or any kind of qualification or any kind of improvement, that you've been perfect from the beginning. That's his truth that Jesus brought. The only sacrifices that were necessary because you believed. You believed you needed atonement. And because you believed you did, you did. And he provided atonement. And atonement has been given. And forgiveness has been made available. But not because God in any sense of the word required it, but because your own psyche demanded that a sacrifice be made to release you from the imprisonment to the lower realms and the lower chakras of your own being, and the imprisonment to the lower frequencies of darkness that have engulfed this planet for so long. Don't you love it? I can't help. Like you said, maybe I want to preach, maybe I don't. I can't help myself. I get beside myself like this guy does at times. It's so beautiful, so magnificent. The truth that we're looking into is so vastly beyond anything we've ever imagined. And the opening that's available to us is so great. Because we're standing on the cusp of a greater age. Not because we got smarter. Well, I do believe we've evolved. I do. But I don't think that's the reason. I think the time has come. The time capsule is open. The ages of unfolding have come. And this dispensation of light belongs to Yeshua, the Messiah. This is his age. The age of Aquarius is his age. When you see the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, that's what Jesus said. What is that sign? That's the sign of Aquarius. When he took his disciples to celebrate his demise, his exit, remember? He said, when you see a man bearing a pitcher of water, right? Follow him into the house. It was a physical enactment of what's happening right now. It was a parable. It was a prophetic event that would cause us to know that as we enter into the age of Aquarius, this is the time where we'll meet him in the upper room. This is the time we'll know him as he is. This is the time when he can reveal himself. This is the time he can be known, not as an object to be worshipped, but as the truth, the eternal truth of man's own existence. And we're there. This is our time. Thank you for your audience. I even put before my time. How do you like that?
He has a question.
Mike has a question for you.
Rokas, go a little more in the difference between Jesus and Christ.
But Jesus...
Let's see. You... Tell me your name again.
Mike.
Yeah. Klett. There's a difference between Mike Klett and the Mike Klett Christ. What is that difference?
One, I'm standing in him, and the other, I'm on my own.
Hmm?
One, I'm standing in him, and the other, I am on my own.
One is your awareness of yourself in an ego consciousness, but it's not the ego consciousness that's a problem, it's the thought that you are that ego consciousness.
So, When you stand in your human ego self and pretend to be God, it's because you don't know that you're God. And there comes the violation. So there's the difference between the ego self and the eternal self, is a simply a shift of awareness. That's all it is. There is really no difference between Jesus the Christ and Jesus the man, only the difference that you make, the same way in your own experience.
So the missing is just not knowing.
Hmm? It's not knowing.
It's just not knowing.
And you know, the Council of Nicaea, at the beginning of that age, they made a big issue about whether Jesus was half man and half God, or total God, total man, and they totally avoided the real issue. The real issue was never who Jesus was, it's who they were. It's who you are. And Jesus came to provide the answer for you to know who you are. You are Peter, he said, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. But Peter couldn't hear that about himself. But if you're anything, then you have to be the Christ of the living God. Well, what else can you be? What else can you be? And if you choose to live in an ego awareness and separate yourself from that and say, well, that wasn't God, instead of honoring the ego self and knowing it's your limitation that you gladly accepted, yes, I will be limited. Well, I will think I'm not what I'm not and what I think, do what I don't, and so on. Oh, does that help any? I don't know if it's in the right direction. We're exploring, like,
that's right,
like Mark said. Are you good? I'd really love it if you ask questions, because often people listen to me put on, make a tirade like this, and then they say, oh no, I don't know where that comes from. But it really helps me if you ask, because, yeah, thank you.
And Candy has the schedule, she's coming up. I will say a balance to this, knowing what this about Jesus has caused me to worship him more.
Yes.
And there is, in Isaiah 9, it says, for unto us a child is born, but unto us a son is given. Now, that's the distinction for me. Jesus was the child that grew up, but the son was ever existing, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful. The mask that he wore, the functional mask, how many of you know a mask can be a burglar, but a mask can also be, we have superheroes. A mask can be either one. A mask is not an evil thing. It's just function. A counsel, the mighty God, the everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace, and on the government shall be, upon that increase of the government and peace shall be no end, another throne of David. I remember years ago somebody said, Jesus, it says in Hebrew 2, not only was tempted in all ways, but was suffered. And when I thought about that, it means that he was confronted with everything we were confronted in, but he never misunderstood who the Father was and who he is. And everything that we do outwardly is a byproduct of this. So we're in no way saying that we're diminishing Jesus. In fact, I'll say this, growing up as a Pentecostal, it was always Jesus lives, Jesus lives, Jesus lives. But what about the God in Christ who raised him from the dead? So we're not diminishing Jesus. We're saying the Son is all of us. The Son is the corporate identity, and Jesus was the pattern Son to bring us into that glory. Isn't that right, Ron and Hart?
Beautiful, sir. Beautiful.
And the lesser will bless the greater.
Yes.
Yes, he is the one, but he came to bring about the birthing of you. That was his mission.
Uh-huh. Okay, some changes have taken place in the schedule, but we're allowing time. We're going to have Mike Clegg come and share to about 2:45. Then we're going to have an interpretive dance, and then we're going to have a Marcus Huntsman play the saxophone. We're going to give Mike some more time. Mike Clegg some more time in the afternoon. Come on up, Mike.
Are you cool with that?
I wouldn't have said if I hadn't talked to him.
I was just thinking what was said. You know, when we change, or when we look at something that really alters our understanding of something that we've had maybe since childhood, sometimes it rocks your world. But the thing for me that this does is it makes God so much bigger. It makes him so enlarged to see the possibility that we are him. We are in him, and he is everything about us, and we're everything about him. And thinking on that and hearing it said these various ways, it just resonates here. You know, we talked about this morning that there's a difference in our concept of the God here and the God here. This fits with the God here. This fits with the God we know, because we're coming to know ourselves. And to me, that's an awesome concept. And one of the things in the two dynamics of power and love, we see those things throughout Scripture. And doctrinally, or through religion, we have been tending to point to a God who is different in the Old Testament and the New Testament, or Genesis to Malachi.